Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Hello, once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us today for Medical Monday is Dr. Michael Mulligan. You remember Michael Mulligan, an orthopedic surgeon specializing in hand, wrist, and elbow injuries from congenital hand deformities to carpal tunnel and complex upper extremity trauma. He practices with Capital Region Orthopedics in Albany, is an assistant professor in the Division of Orthopedic Surgery at Albany Med. Dr. Mulligan earned his medical degree at Albany Medical College. He completed his residency in orthopedic surgery there as well and completed a fellowship in hand surgery at the University of Washington at Seattle. He's a board-certified guy by the American Board of Orthopedic Surgery in both general orthopedic surgery and hand surgery. Dr. Michael Mulligan, welcome to Medical Monday.
Thank you very much.
Let's get a couple of things out of the way. Number one, you know, it's probably been your crutch to bear throughout life being Michael Mulligan, right?
Well, I have a few copies of the children's book.
Yeah, it's quite the book. You'll all remember that, you know, they put him down in the basement where he built the house, but then they couldn't get him out.
Nope.
So he became the heater for the house, I believe.
Exactly.
I think that's how it went. I don't remember, you know, my kids are 40 years old now, so it's been a little while.
I still read it to my kids.
Do you? That's good. Michael Mulligan keeps going. Okay, hands are hard, right? I mean, hands are supposed to be the hardest of all.
They're intricate. A lot more detail to it than some of the other things we do in orthopedics.
Little bones?
Small bones, small structures, nerves, vessels, tendons. A lot of different anatomy there.
So how many hand guys are there at Albany Med?
We have six now.
Wow.
Upper extremity trained. Yep.
That's a lot.
Yep.
And when you're assistant professor, do you have to train anybody or is that sort of honorific?
No, I have a lot of responsibilities at Albany Med, training the residents that I once was several years ago. And so I'm actively involved in their education and helping them become orthopedic surgeons.
And as far as I'm concerned, you're a real hero for another reason, and that is you went to Albany High.
I did.
And that is just great to see.
Yep.
And
very proud of that.
Yeah, and you should be. Oh, that's wonderful. Okay, you ready to take some calls? Mike?
Sure, let's go.
Okay, let's go to Portia in Leverett, Massachusetts. Okay, Portia, you're on.
Oh, thank you. I can't speak very well, but I'll try to be clear. I have laryngitis. But I'm calling because I'm just baffled by some aspect of knee arthritis. Is it okay to ask a knee question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so I know I have knee arthritis, and I know that sometimes it doesn't hurt at all. I don't take anything for it. I just cope. And then I'll be reading or something and feeling really good and having a good time, and all of a sudden, wham, I get pain in my knees and I'm not even doing anything. Why does it go from pain when I'm not doing anything to non-pain?
It's obviously a great question to start out, and I certainly don't have a problem talking about knees because I am trained in orthopedics, but you know, arthritis, wear and tear arthritis, obviously very common, and it's one of those things where you can be, as you say, being active and doing a lot, and then it would make sense if it would act up. But sometimes it's just being in one position for a long time. You know, the joint gets a little stiffened up, and then you get to start to move it, and you feel pain. So it can definitely happen, you know, in both instances. And it's one of those things where, like you said, if the most of the time you can bear it, your knee is better than any sort of knee replacement that they could do for you, even though technology is getting better and better. And if you're able to handle the symptoms as they ebb and flow, that's a lot better way to treat it than, you know, rushing into anything more invasive. But to answer your question specifically, you're right. It doesn't have to be from use. You can be in just one position for a while and then get moving, and then just it being stiff because it's arthritic, it can act up on you in terms
of
pain.
Exactly what is arthritis?
Arthritis is basically a degeneration of the cartilage, which is the kind of like the soft tissue shock absorber of the knee or of any joint. And what happens over time is that cartilage just with use kind of wears thinner, and then the bone ends up kind of pressing on bone, and this whole inflammatory process starts, which can lead to the pain and the you know, dysfunction, basically.
So is arthritis calcification?
It's not necessarily calcification. It's at its core the lack of the joint surface cartilage, that soft tissue lining that We'd all love to figure out ways, and a lot of our biologic therapies are trying to figure out ways to regenerate it and to make it grow. You know, whether it's an athlete with an injury where they lose cartilage dramatically, or in this arthritic process where over time it wears thin.
Are we making progress at all?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, even in just the 15 or so years from my starting of training and then being a surgeon, there's been a lot of advances, but still the biologics are where, you know, we could potentially see making the most impact, because we can still do a total knee or a total hip when arthritis gets bad at end stage, but in trying to figure out a way to slow that process and prevent it, you know,
sure,
that's where we're still got research to go.
Should Portia just sort of catalog the way she's sleeping and, you know, what she's doing?
Yeah, and activities, and if she doesn't have any contraindications, you know, the over-the-counter anti-inflammatories will help symptomatically. And then, though, when it becomes more frequent or those things just don't cut it, then that's the instance where you should call and see someone.
You know, I've asked a lot of questions. I've asked a lot of people, including medical people, and no one ever gave me an answer. So I have to say I'm really grateful. But I also want to say that when I was a kid, I used to show off. It was such a stupid thing to do by jumping out of second floor windows.
Yeah.
Mom said, "You're going to get arthritis of the knees."
And she was right.
She was right.
Portia, we got to let you go. Believe it or not, you started something big here. There are five phones blinking off the hook.
Oh, good. Thank
you.
Bye.
Right. Bye. Okay, we'll go to Duncan in Cavendish, Vermont. Duncan, you're on.
Hi. Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Doctor. I have carpal tunnel syndrome. I've been diagnosed with that in my both hands and also tennis elbow, in both elbows, and I have a lot of pain in the elbows. I'm told these conditions are related. I'd like to know more. And then the other question is, I will have the operation in about a month. Before that, I plan to do my firewood for the next season. This involves heavy lifting, splitting with a log splitter, and stacking. Would that be advisable? Could that further injure my condition?
So the first part of your question, that they're commonly associated, and they certainly are, because both of those problems are pretty frequent things that I see in my office as an upper extremity person. I call them problems of life because they're so common.
Yeah.
And, you know, one doesn't lead to the other, but in a lot of situations you'll see people that have both of these entities. And, you know, the tennis elbow tends to be a little bit more problematic because you can go through a phase where it's like a dull ache and then at times can feel like you want to chop your arm off. And the carpal tunnel is usually a little bit more straightforward from my standpoint because there are conservative arms, which it sounds like you've been through, and then ultimately, you know, they can recommend surgery for you. I'd say to get to your second part, the doing things and living your life is not necessarily going to make the surgery for whoever's doing it any easier or tougher. If that's stuff that you want to get done before you're in that post-op stage, because I warn you that surgery is not pain-free. At least they haven't figured out how to make it pain-free yet. So if you want to get all that stuff done beforehand, that's not going to necessarily set you back in terms of your ability to recoup from the surgery, if that's your question.
So, yeah, Duncan, if I can just, because I think one of the things we want to do here is make sure everybody understands what's what. Maybe I wasn't paying enough attention, but carpal tunnel is when the sort of, what happens, everything closes in and...
Yeah, so it's a compressive nerve problem, basically.
Yeah.
And so the space through which that nerve runs in your wrist just becomes too tight over time. Sometimes there can be extrinsic causes, but a lot of times it's just, like I said, life, and it ends up being that the nerve is just too angry as it goes through your wrist. And God gave us, or whoever you believe in, gave us this channel and this ligament that's over there, and what we end up doing in the surgery is just opening that up. It really serves no purpose. There's a couple different ways. The old school way that I was trained how to do initially was you make a cut right on the palm and you go down to this ligament and open it up from the top down, basically. I tend to do it a little bit less invasive because I go through a scope, so I'm looking at the carpal tunnel through a camera,
right,
and I have a device that deploys a blade, and so I'm basically releasing that from the bottom up instead of the top down, but I'm still cutting that same
ligament.
Well,
when you say you open it up, how do you open it up?
Well, you basically are putting a slit in that ligament, so it's like I liken it to putting a sunroof in the ceiling. You're basically decompressing the space so there's more air for the nerve to breathe, basically.
Okay, great. Duncan, I'm so sorry we have to take a break, believe it or not, and I love the fact that you call, and thank you very much for doing it.
Yeah, okay.
Bye.
Right, thank you.
1-800-348-2551. That opens up one free phone. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Ellis Medicine, providing inpatient and outpatient care for New York's capital region. Reinventing healthcare one patient at a time. EllisMedicine.org. Audio Video Corporation, offering design and integration services for the boardroom, the conference room, and the classroom. Since 1946, audiovideocorp.com. LiveWell, Albany, New York, providing intensive outpatient psychological services for treatment of eating disorders in and around the Capital Region. AlbanyHPA.com. And from MIFA Victory Theater and Wisteria Hearst Museum, presenting Cyclonic, an evening of dramatized vaudeville, the story of Ava Tangue. April 18th at Wisteria Hearst Museum, Holyoke, wisteriahearst.org.
Oh, we're back. Zachary was just waving his hands wildly to indicate, stop talking to each other and just remember why we're here. Okay, let's go to Jim in Ballston Lake. Okay, Jim, you're on.
Okay, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling because over a year ago, I developed hip pain. And after over a year of treatment at a orthopedic practice, my GP referred me to a physiatric therapist. And he found that I have a partial tear of my gluteus medius. And he had me do physical therapy, which didn't help. So he presented as an alternative a procedure that's not covered by health insurance, where they take some of my blood, withdraw the caplets, and direct the caplets directly into the area of the tear. Have you heard of that procedure, and have you any idea whether it's considered effective? Because it's not paid for. I think it's like $300 or $400 each time.
So, yeah, the platelets are what you're talking about.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's called a PRP injection, which is platelet-rich plasma. And it's basically a procedure where they spin your own blood down so that they get this platelet-rich plasma portion of the blood, and then they put it in an injectable and give it to you in the area of injury. And, you know, you hear a lot about it in the news, and even if you're a sports fan, because a lot of the athletes actually get it done. And the theory behind it is that you're kind of recruiting that kind of your own body's way of healing things and giving you a little bit of a boost of that right to the site of the problem.
So that's the theory, but does it work?
Well, I tell you, I'm a man rooted in science mostly, and a lot of the studies are very conflicting. And what I have more experience with the elbow, the one patient described tennis elbow, that's a common area where people will offer this. And there's been some studies showing improvement and some studies not. So that's by and large why, like this gentleman's saying, the insurance carriers won't cover it because there isn't really good data behind it. There are people that'll tell you they've had it done and feel great, and other people will tell you that they wasted the $400. So it's kind of the jury's still out on it, but the initial research is very conflicting.
So, Jim, what are you going to do?
I don't know, because I've had a year of 3 MRIs, 7 steroid injections, physical therapy, probably had $600 in copays. And, you know, I'm 70 years old, and I still would like to do some hiking and skiing, but I can't anymore unless that's taken care of. So I'm not sure what I'll do. But just going for walks in the park is so boring.
Better than nothing.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jim.
It's better than the alternative.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate
it. Thank you very much.
Right. Okay, we'll go to Michael in Shokan. Okay, Michael, you're on.
Hi. I had pain in my both wrists, and I had them evaluated at the Center for Hand Surgery in April of 2011.
Where's that?
And I was told I had bone spurs at the bottom of my thumbs, and I had a little arthritis across the top of my hands. And for various circumstances, I really haven't been able to get back there and deal with it. And now I'm living in Shokan, and I'm wondering what the doctor thinks of my chances, if I get surgery, if it was warranted and it was okayed, of my hand being able to return to the point that I can write without pain. I can write now, but after a few minutes, I get pain in my lower thumb. And, you know, play guitar, play piano, any of these activities that involve flexing that thumb down.
I have to ask you a question with this because it really depends on what part of the thumb you're talking about. Are we talking about closer to your wrist, the base of your thumb?
Yes.
Okay, because that's a pretty common joint to get wear and tear arthritis in that I see frequently, women more so than men, but it doesn't matter. And I can tell you if you've treated that conservatively, which it sounds like you've gotten some opinions on, you know, and ultimately they may be talking about surgery, to replace that joint isn't like when others of my colleagues talk about replacing hips or knees, because we don't put an artificial joint in there. We don't replace it with metal and plastic, because it's not a load-bearing joint in the sense of weight-bearing. It sees pinch and grip.
But they were talking about removing the bone spur.
Correct. So basically, you can take the, if it is that arthritis, you can take the bone out and actually take the bone out of there, the bottom bone in the thumb joint. You can't just leave it, because obviously you were given that for a reason. But what you do is you replace it with your own tissue, and usually you take a tendon and you can wrap a tendon up, ball it up, and put it in as the new joint. And that's a thumb arthroplasty, as we call it, a CMC, because it's the specific part of your thumb where the bottom of the thumb meets the wrist area. And if that's what you have, even though it's hard for me to know over the radio here, it's something that it definitely can be a game changer in terms of quality of life. You know, women who can't crochet and knit after they recover from the surgery, which is not an overnight deal, but with some patience and therapy, they get back to what they're doing relatively pain-free if that's the problem. So it's a very successful surgery in that, for that indication.
Where do you live, Michael?
Shokan.
Oh, Shokan.
Blackholder Road.
Of course you do. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thanks a lot for your call. Appreciate it very much.
And yeah, thank you.
Right. And we had one that came in over the internet at voxpop@wamc.org. Voxpop@wamc.org. Can you comment on the phenomenon of mommy thumb? My mom friends and I all have this persistent pain between the thumb and the wrist that is probably due to lugging around small children. What exactly is it? And is there any cure, things that you can do to make it better? And that's from Julie. And you're a new father again for the third time.
I am. So this is not something that I haven't experienced myself as a patient, I can say. So whether you call it mommy's thumb, I call it new mommy's wrist, it's the same thing. It's typically a bad tendonitis. And you think about it, if you haven't had a kid and you're constantly picking a child up, you know, that's a repetitive activity that you're not used to. And what happens is that you get this really bad tendonitis over the back of the wrist and thumb. And it can be pretty debilitating where you can't even want to move your thumb or wrist. And the usual first-line treatment for it is rest, common sense, ice, anti-inflammatories. I often give the new moms a splint for a period of time because they still need to lift the child, but they need to take less stress off that wrist tendon. So that'll be the first trial. Very successful are cortisone injections into that spot. Huh. They tend to calm that down.
So does ibuprofen work?
I think so. I always try that first, unless there's a medical reason why they can't take it. I always try that first, that and a splint. If that doesn't cut it, then a cortisone shot, and then there is a surgery for that. But typically with the new mommy's wrist, as the child grows, the child doesn't have to be picked up as much, and trying all these other things, it usually calms down.
Okay, we'll go to Michelle in Windsor, Massachusetts. Okay, I think. Michelle, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Great, you're on.
Yes, I have a question about knuckle cracking. Actually, three mini questions.
Uh-huh.
One, what is making the noise? Two, why does it seem to be addictive? And three, does it really damage the knuckle?
It's a great question. I was just referencing this question to a patient this morning. So I can tell you that the cracking the knuckles phenomenon is largely fluid moving through air in a space, just like you would feel, you know, bubble wrap popping.
Really?
It's fluid, you know, basically the joint fluid, and there's air. It's a vacuum, and as you're cracking it, you're pushing it to one area, and you feel that subjective crack. I can't really talk about the psychological components of it, but I can tell you that I get a lot of parents that'll have their kids that do it to annoyance, and the parents want me to tell the kids to stop doing it. So because I'm a parent myself, I'll give in to the parents and tell the kids to stop doing it. But I can't give you any data that says it predisposes you to arthritis. It's just a pretty common finding that some
it's
people.
It's also an awful lot of fun.
Well, some people can do it as a show. It's like a cheap party trick for some people. So
really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just did it.
Yeah. But it's not harmful,
yeah,
in my opinion.
Thank you very much.
Michelle,
yeah,
thanks a lot. Okay, let's go to Bob in Albany. You're on, Bob.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I self-diagnosed myself as having trigger finger, my left index. It's pretty obvious what it is. And I'm wondering, before I start getting involved with the medical profession, is there anything one can do at home to try to to tamp down the inflammation and reopen the sheath that's tight around the tendon, or is it necessary to go medical? And if it ends up being surgical, what's the recovery situation like?
So trigger finger is also something that's pretty common that I see a lot as a
and
hand specialist. I'm going to go right into that. No, it's okay. It's basically a bad tendonitis like the caller suggested. And what happens is that the tendonitis is in your flexor tendons of your fingers. And in the index through the small finger, there's actually two tendons running in a small channel. And that channel has a sheath, a tendon sheath. And that becomes inflamed, and then if it goes on long enough, that sheath can thicken. So you think about you're trying to pass two structures through a tube that's now tighter. So the trigger is it can get stuck, and a lot of patients will wake up in the morning and one finger will be clenched into their palm, and they actually have to open it up with their other fingers on their opposite hand to get it to unlock. But it can also be that your fingers are straight and they can't bend. Same principle. It's just they can't move through that tight channel. And so his question, I think, was what can he do on his own? Like we mentioned before, Motrin, ibuprofen, it's a tendonitis. So if you can take that, that should help. A lot of times once it gets to the point where it's triggering, it's hard to soften up that sheath. It's an interesting debate I have with my wife, who's a hand therapist, on whether splinting can help, because there's a few studies out there that say if you put a splint on at night to keep it straight, then you might not have that same trigger in the morning.
What does she think?
She thinks splints can help. I think, you know, injections and surgery help, but that's coming from the eyes of a surgeon, you know.
Yeah. But give a guy a knife.
Yeah, but I think, a chance to cut is a chance to cure, as they make fun of us. But I always try conservative measures first. You can try a splint if you want, Motrin. If that doesn't work, then I would inject it with cortisone first. That has a very high success rate people. Yes, and so if there's not a reason you can't have cortisone, then I would try that. And then if that fails, then ultimately surgery is a good option. The last part of his question was, what's the recoup? It depends. If you're over 50, it tends to be a little bit longer than if you're under 50, just because the joints are already a little bit worn and tear, and you're doing a lot of work in a small area, the finger can get quite swollen. But by and large, it's a very successful surgery.
I had cortisone shots in the back, and I thought it worked very well the first time. Not so much the second time, not at all the third time. What do you think?
A lot of people will say that. I think your body kind of builds up a tolerance almost. I mean, you get used to it.
Oh,
you
I
know,
see.
And over time, it probably the problem that is there, if it's from wear and tear, with more time, will get worse, common sense. So,
Alan, just to follow up on that.
Yeah,
okay,
sure.
Real quick. Go ahead.
Yeah. Could you quantify your sense of what the timing is for recovery? Is we talking weeks immobilized or months?
Yeah, it's not immobilized. You're using it right away with most surgeons who do that procedure. You're using it right away. It's just how much inflammation and swelling you get will affect how long it takes you to get back to what you want to do. I usually tell people it's on the order of weeks to months, if that helps.
Great. Thanks, Bob. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to Vicki in Pittsfield. Vicki, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two quick questions. I have osteoarthritis and I'm 69. I've done physical therapy and I do those exercises every day and I walk, so I'm handling it. I can't take a lot of medications because I have stomach issues. But I remember hearing on this program, WAMC, like about 5 to 7 years ago, a program about a sort of a stem cell-related treatment that was being given in Canada. And I thought eventually maybe it would come here and it would be helpful for me, but I have never heard of it again. Do you know anything about that? People were going in and they were having trouble walking and they were able to walk out of the treatment. It was something that was injected in the knee.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that are out there. I can't really tell you that of what you were describing if we really have it in the U.S. now. There, you know, we were talking before about the biologic therapy, trying to basically regenerate cartilage is what we're talking about, and growing it either on a test tube and implanting it or trying to inject something that's going to stimulate its growth. We still haven't really found an answer to that. You know, we have a lot of suggestions and there's been some trials of things, but, you know, what you're describing, you know, we really don't have here at this point.
You know, Vicki, what you said is very interesting, because I love reading the New York Times or any other newspaper, and then you find the results of some testing that they did, and you say, oh, boy, that's terrific. Now we're all beginning to be saved. And then you never, ever hear about it again.
So, yeah, it was very disappointing, yeah.
So that may be. I remember one about rhesus monkeys and vasectomies. And he said, rhesus monkeys with vasectomies, I think, had more heart disease. And then we never heard about that one.
Yeah, my other question was on Dupuytren's disease, which my husband has in his hands. And he's had operations on both hands. One of them is now regrowing, and he refuses to get that operated on again. And, you know, we're 69, so, you know, he says he can handle it. I mean, he still does all kinds of things, so he's fine. But, I mean, how? I mean, should it be operated on again, do you think, or...?
Well, Dupuytren's is basically a disease of connective tissue or scar tissue in your hand, and it's the same tissue that I have that your husband has, but he has this problem where it grows too much, and it can lead to contracture like you were talking about. And actually, to segue your biologics talk, that's where we've actually made a lot of progress in the last 5+ years, that we have a enzyme basically that we can inject into the Dupuytren's disease, into that scarred tissue in the hand, and then bring you into the office a couple days later and open it up. It doesn't really eat away all the disease. It kind of breaks it on either side at where it's under most tension, and then you get a manipulation a couple days later to open it up. But it seems to be better tolerated by folks who have gone through big deal surgeries where it's been opened up and taken out, because you really can't cure the genetic problem. So I don't know what your husband looks like. Obviously, I can't give that kind of advice over the phone, but it's something where, you know, he should get it looked at, and that might be an option for him.
Thank you, Vicki.
Okay, thank you very much.
Appreciate
Bye-bye.
It. Okay, let's go to Kelly in Saratoga. Okay, Kelly, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have two questions. Carpal tunnel and tendonitis. I'm in therapy, and I've been in therapy. I've got the kinesio strips right on my arm today. I was wondering two things. Is there any possible chance that this is going to disappear or go away on me? And the other thing is, I'm an artist and a painter and a drawer. Now, if I, at some point, I do have the carpal tunnel surgery, I'm wondering, is there going to be a loss of dexterity in those fine motor skills of my fingers?
So is the first part in reference to the tennis elbow more in terms of will it go away, or was that also the carpal tunnel?
Both.
So the carpal tunnel, typically once you have it to the point where it's bothering enough that you've sought treatment, very rarely does it reverse itself and go away, in my experience. Sometimes it just happens that it gets worse slowly over time, and some people more quickly. But ultimately that, you know, carpal tunnel is one of those things that we do have a good answer for. If you don't let it go too long, which is I always tell people, some people are stubborn. They let their hands stay numb way too long, and then there's only so much I can do to decompress the nerve. I can't make it grow back, so to speak, if it's gone too far. But if you're at a point where it's affecting the quality of your life, you're waking up at night with it numb, and it's affecting your dexterity, like you said, and you failed everything else, you know, the surgery is not a bad option. Obviously, no surgery is without complication or potential risk, but it's a pretty straightforward surgery with a very good track record. The tennis elbow is difficult. It's one of the least favorite things that I take care of, because there's an awful lot of nice people out there that can be in intractable pain from it, and it can come and go, and you can have it for a while and it goes away, and then it comes back years later. And the surgery itself, once you get to that point, luckily there's a lot of other things we try first, but the surgery isn't as successful as other things we do, and I always have that conversation with people.
And why do they call it tennis?
Well, I mean, not everybody gets it from playing tennis, nor do you see it in people who play tennis, because tennis isn't as popular as it once was. But they call it tennis because when you do a backhand in tennis, when you're extending your wrist, that's usually the tendon that's being pulled over the elbow that's giving you this wear and tear of the tendon. It's truly more a wear and tear, a tendinosis, than it is an inflammation or a tendonitis. That's why people tell you they take Motrin and it doesn't help, because it's not really going at that problem. And so she alludes to some taping and therapy, and we try injections more so to kind of recruit a healing response to it, almost like an acupuncture effect. But a lot of people, I will say, the light at the end of the tunnel is most patients who get it, it will burn out over time.
The tennis elbow.
Yes, it will burn out. It'll go away. One morning you'll wake up, it'll be gone. You'll be like, oh, my God, I'm loving this. But not everybody has it, you know, for good, which is different than the carpal tunnel piece, which usually gets worse over time.
Kelly, you're followed by a long line. Thank you very much for...
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Let's go to Josephine in Rhinebeck. Yeah, Rhinebeck. Thanks, Doc.
No problem.
Hello.
Hello.
This is Josephine from Rhinebeck.
Yep.
I am astonished that the lady just before me had a similar problem, and now I'm discouraged about what the answer is going to be to me. I have had carpal tunnel syndrome for quite a while. I am one of those stubborn people who didn't want to go through the surgery when it first started because I'm not ambidextrous, and I was worried about having to have one hand disabled for 6 weeks. So now I'm wondering how successful would it be if I did go through it now after all this time, and I am having a lot of trouble. My fingers are numb. When I pick something up, I have no feeling as to whether or not I really have it in my hand because I can't be sure. And I'm just wondering what would my chances be if I decided to try to help it now.
So one of the key questions I ask patients that present to me like this is, are you numb in your hands all the time?
Most of the time.
So there is a segment of time where you're not numb. Would that be a correct statement?
Probably when I'm sleeping.
Yeah. So how often do you wake up at night with it?
Oh, no. It doesn't wake me up.
Doesn't wake you up. You're just pretty much numb all the time?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that, like we said, is a potential issue in terms of that you've had it for a while and it's pretty far advanced in the sense that it wasn't, you know, released back then. And I can't say that you should have had it done back then, but I can just say that, just like I said to the last caller, if you're numb almost all the time, and the surgery can certainly prevent it from getting any worse than it is now, but it doesn't have as great a success of reversing the numbness that's there if it's that persistent.
Okay, Josephine, I'm so sorry to tell you this, but we're going to have to take a little break, and that means we're done with your call, but thank you so much for making it. Appreciate it.
Thank you for your response, and no thank you for taking my call. Bye-bye now.
Okay, so we're going to take just a little bit of a break, a couple of seconds, and we'll be right back. Don't go away. If you're Audrey or Jim or Christy or somebody else with a different name, there are two free lines. Make that call now, 1-800-348-2551.
Support comes from the Stram Center, investigative medicine specializing in Lyme, women's health, gastrointestinal, cancer treatment, acupuncture, and nutrition. Located 10 minutes from Albany and in Bennington, Vermont, stramcenter.com. The John Keel Music Group, with shops in Albany, Clifton Park, Hermes in Schenectady, and D&M Music in Pleasant Valley. Locally owned and operated since 1930, johnkeelmusic.com. Hawthorne Valley Waldorf School, Harlemville, New York, early childhood through grade 12. Accepting applications, nurturing living connections, hawthornvalleyschool.org. And from Interactive Media Consulting, Saratoga Springs, New York, marketing creative and business ideas through brand development, website development, social media, print work, and public relations since 1996, imediaconsult.com.
And we are back, thanks to our wonderful Zachary, who handles the controls for us and knows what to do. Okay, so we heard from Jake, who says, I believe I have cubital tunnel syndrome. I work on a computer for about 10 hours a day, and this began with my left arm 2 years ago. Now my right arm symptoms, my pinky finger and ring finger on hands tingle. When I place my elbow on my desk, it's like hitting your funny bone, which most of us have experienced. I am now waking up at night if I lay on either elbow, and so on.
So, yeah, I mean, he kind of describes it pretty well in terms of what cubital tunnel syndrome is. It's a nerve compression of a different nerve, in this case, the ulnar nerve at the elbow. And that's the nerve that when you think about hitting your funny bone, that's the one you hit. And usually when we hit it, it's annoying and it makes the small ring finger numb going down your arm. And then you shake it out, it goes away. And people that have the cubital tunnel syndrome, it's a chronic thing. And they basically have a lot of pressure across the elbow where they're getting more persistent numbness all the time. And also that nerve ends up giving you a lot of the motor strength in your hand. So a lot of those folks will have a lot of weakness and problems with things that they need really fine dexterity and grip for.
Well, you can get into trouble with so many different things, can't you, Doc?
You can. It's called life, like I said.
It's called life.
All these things are pretty common, you know. And the first thing with cubital tunnel, I always tell people, is position. How you position yourself, whether...
What do you mean?
In terms of your arm during work and not resting it on that nerve.
Oh, I see. The ulnar nerve.
Right on there. And when you're sleeping, always having that arm more straight. We tend to sleep with the arm bent up at the elbow, and that puts more pressure on the nerve. So different tricks you can do, like grab an extra pillow at night, or even wrap a soft beach towel around your arm so it's not too tight, but you're keeping your arm more straight when you sleep, can really help that first. So postural things are very important with cubital tunnel.
Yeah, I always wonder whether we have as many choices as you indicate. You know, you're lying there, your parents put you down a certain way, and then for the rest of your life, you're sleeping exactly the same way. Wow. It's tough. Okay, look, we got five people on the phone. We're running out of time. We got to move, okay? Everybody move fast. All right, Audrey, you're on. Move.
Hi. I'm wondering if he has ever heard of an operation by a Dr. Brian Adams in Iowa City that takes a tendon from one of your arms. I fell and I shattered my right wrist 20 years ago, and this was my last operation. And then takes the tendon from one of the arms, drills a hole in your radius and your ulna, and uses that tendon to weave in and out in between, and then you're in a cast for 3.5 months, and then the collagen sets it, as opposed to two bolts was what the only option I had here in the Capital District, two bolts, one on my wrist and one on my arm.
Okay. It's hard for me to know without seeing it, but what it sounds like is Brian Adams, which is not to be confused with the singer. He's a hand surgeon out in Iowa. He actually trained one of my residents who went through his fellowship a few years ago. I don't know him well, but the procedure is called the Adams procedure, which I think is what you're talking about, where the bones at your wrist, the big bones, the radius and ulna that allow you to do palm up and palm down motion. It sounds like that's where you have the issue. And the Adams weave is such that you're taking that tendon graft and you're trying to get stability across them by drilling the holes through, as opposed to the bolts may be some sort of a limited fusion there where you're stopping motion at other places to compensate for that problem. And, you know, that's a pretty difficult problem that it sounds like you have because you've had the previous injury or surgery on. And those are definitely options out there for that issue in general. It's really hard for me to speak on the specifics of that one without, like, you know, looking at x-rays and things like that. Yeah, the Adams procedure is very well described. Yep.
So how you feeling, Audrey?
Listen, I'm telling you, my pain was cut in half.
That's wonderful. Audrey, thank you. We got a lot of people on the line. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, let's go to Jim in Catskill. Jim, you're on.
Hi, this is Jim. I have carpal tunnel in my both wrists, but I had an orthopedic surgeon check out the one on the right about 5 or 6 years ago. We did physical therapy, and it didn't help. And then he suggested a cortisone shot. And in his office, he gave me this shot, and I went into anaphylactic shock or whatever.
Oh,
and turns out what I didn't know is I'm allergic to polyethylene glycol, which was about 50% of the solution in the depo-meteral.
Okay. Now, Jim, only because we have so many people on the line, what's the question?
Is there a safe cortisone shot I can get being allergic with my condition?
That is a great question where I would basically have you ask whatever doctor's office you see if all the different carriers they have for their steroid solution, if there's one that doesn't have that, if that is your specific allergy. It would make me very leery to offer you another one, even if I had no polyethylene glycol in it, because how do you know that that's the component that was in the mixture that gave you that reaction? Because that's obviously a very severe and potentially dangerous reaction. Yeah. So
How do they pull you out of it? The anaphylactic shock, what'd they give you?
What? I'm sorry?
How did you get over the anaphylactic shock? They gave you the medicine. You went into shock. How did you get out of it?
Two IVs, keep my blood pressure up, EpiPen, and an ambulance.
Okay. Hey, Jim, thanks for the warning. We're trying to get to everybody. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Luckily, something like that's pretty rare. So.
Right, exactly. Let's go to Christy in North Adams. Christy, you're on.
I have an artificial knee. It's a very nice knee. It works. but every so often I have pain within the knee itself, and I don't understand how I can have pain on two pieces of metal or plastic.
Well, not my area of expertise, but I can tell you that. How long have you had the knee for?
Oh, 10 years.
I mean, total knees definitely have a lifespan. They're not designed to be forever. That's why I said before, your joint is still better than any artificial joint we can come up with, even though they're lasting longer and longer these days. So you can't say just because you have a metal and plastic knee in there that you're going to be pain-free for the rest of your life, you know? So there are definitely things that can happen with knees over time. It doesn't necessarily mean that your knee has a problem. Sometimes you can have pain that's referred to the knee that has nothing to do with the knee joint itself. So, you know, it's a good question, but it's something where, you know, you should probably have whoever did your knee check it out and make sure that your knee is doing well and that it might not be something else.
Now that sounds so rational, but what about...
I like rational.
Yeah, but what about phantom knee, phantom arm? You know, you hear about people who have their arms removed and then they think they still have an arm.
I can't say, because you really do have the rest of your leg that we see a lot of phantom pain after you get a knee replaced. That's a good one, Alan.
Christy, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Okay, let's go to Renee in New Paltz. Okay, Renee, you're on.
Hi. I'm not asking you a question. I have something that may be helpful to the people who are complaining about carpal tunnel. Some years ago, I had carpal tunnel in my left hand, and the orthopedist told me to try B6 because studies had shown that it could sometimes take it away, and in my case, it did. And it had been very painful. I would wake up in the middle of the night and practically cry. It was so painful. So maybe this would be helpful to others. Have
doctor,
you heard of that?
Doctor, you want to react?
Sure. The B vitamins have a beneficial effect on nerves. Some people with neuropathy that are vitamin B deficient, and you would never know it unless they tested for it.
I'm going to get me some of that.
Yeah, but I can't say that it's going to help everybody, but I think she's in the right person, that may be a benefit if they're vitamin B deficient.
Well, who was it? Okay, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate it. All right, let's go to... I think that was Renee in New Paltz. Yeah.
Yes.
No,
that was.
And Sally from Chesterfield. Okay, Sally, you're on.
Hi. I've had carpal tunnel diagnosed for maybe 25 years. And I worked construction up until 6 or 7 years ago. And it stopped bothering me when I stopped using my shoulders as much as I was as my wrists. I still do a lot of work with my hands. And when it bothers me is at night when I sleep on that side, on my shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And it bothers me if I should do a house painting, big arm movement project, and it bothers me from using that shoulder. I do fine painting and a lot of work with my hands, and that doesn't seem to bother it. So every time when I've gone to an orthopedist, he said, that you have to have the surgery on the wrist, and then we'll look at the shoulder because that's more complicated.
Okay, doctor?
So this one's a tough one, but a lot of times carpal tunnel symptoms can involve the shoulder, believe it or not. There's a lot of times where it's two distinct problems, which it sounds like from the orthopedist that's seeing you has suggested that there's two entities, but some of it can be coming from the carpal tunnel. You can get people who feel like they have radiating pain that goes all the way up the arm to their shoulder. I can tell you that definitely the vibratory tools that you're not using as a construction worker anymore are helping, because the nerve does not like vibration. It's one of the few jobs that we've proven that actually can cause it. A lot of people think typing causes it. It's not true. They've done really good studies that have put people of the same, you know, background right next to each other at a desk, and one gets it, one doesn't. I think the only thing that's ever been really shown to prove to cause it as a job would be people who work vibratory tools like construction type.
Sally, how old are you?
65.
Oh, boy. Well, got to give you a lot of respect. Thank you very much, Sally.
You're welcome.
Appreciate
Bye.
It. Okay, and then we heard from a guy who wants to know this. He says, I play football and basketball with friends whenever I can. Oftentimes while playing, I will stub my finger or even my thumb. And this happens to other guys, too. When this happens, it really hurts. If this keeps happening, is there any danger? Could it lead to having surgery one day?
Well, finger sprains are pretty common. You always call it the jammed finger. And the jammed finger can be innocent and just that, and it's a sprain, and it gets better over time, and you're able to go back to it. It's people who do a lot of repetitive-type sports that keep re-injuring them or fight through them and don't treat them properly where they can become a problem. Luckily, that's the minority. But, you know, there's nothing you can really do to prevent them other than making sure that, you know.
Oh, I know the answer.
Yeah.
Don't play basketball.
Exactly. Don't put it in harm's way. But you got to live your life. So it's not necessarily a problem as long as you're not seeing.
It's easy for you to say because you're 6 foot what?
3 on a good day.
6 foot three on a day. And I'm 5 foot five. So it's easy for you to say, you know, do it. You got to lead your life. I'm not playing basketball with people who are too tall. let's go to... Well, this is very interesting.
We did four,
we
I
did
think.
We did four. Thank you. You're such a good doc. Let's go to Katrine in Glens Falls.
Hi. Is this the doctor?
Yes.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I've been diagnosed with something called CPPD or pseudogout in my wrists. And this happened, I guess I was diagnosed about 2, maybe 3 years ago. And nobody can really quite narrow it down. I'm 63. I weigh like 100 pounds. You know, my wrists are so swollen and painful, and it's just getting worse. I've been to 2 rheumatologists, and, you know, they're like, well, come back when it flares up, and then we'll withdraw some fluid, but it never flares up. So I'm not sure if it's the correct diagnosis or if it's something else. So... I know it's a kind of rare, disease or whatever to have, and I was hoping that at the end of your show that I could hear some information about how to get in touch with you.
Okay, you can do that now. Go ahead, Doc. Where do they call?
Well, I mean, I work out of Capital Region Ortho, which is the Bone and Joint Center in Albany. We have a lot of satellite offices. You're up in Glens Falls. We go up there. I don't go up there, but I go up to Clifton Park. Main number is 489-2666 is how you reach us. 2666.
2666.
489-2666. Okay.
No, free referral over the phone. Right. But pseudo gout, you know, it's fake gout, you know, if you break it down. And gout, a lot of people hear about with you know, heavy drinkers or red wine, meat, that kind of stuff. And you can get inflammation in any joint. A lot of people talk about it in their foot. Pseudo gout is a crystal arthropathy, which is you get crystal depositions in your joints.
Oh, interesting.
Exactly.
And it's basically a calcium crystal, and that's the CPPD that she's talking about. And it's not uncommon. I mean, it's something I'll see from time to time, and it can be troubling. You know, different options are, you know, anti-inflammatory. Sounds like you've seen a rheumatologist, cortisone injections, but you can't really treat the fact that you're predisposed to getting it. You know, some people talk about dietary changes, but it's not like gout in that regard. So
exactly.
It can be troubling.
You can eat asparagus.
Oh, it really.
Yeah.
It's like not gout, and every time I told someone to do that, they're you have gout, and I'm like, no, I don't.
Well, that's good because, you know, King George III, Mad King George, bad gout.
Yeah.
I just wanted
to point, but this is different.
No, I know.
It's fake gout.
That was a different king.
It still can be just as painful. It's just a different process.
King. Okay, thanks a lot, Katrin.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, let's go to Tom in Pittsfield. Tom, you're on. Oh, no, you're not. Marianne, you're on.
Seems to me
there were two ones. Yeah, go ahead.
All right. I have what I'm quite sure is a ganglion cyst.
A ganglion? A ganglion?
Yeah.
Okay.
And in my, you know, it's real close to the wrist there. And so about a year ago, a surgeon said, unless it's causing you pain, don't do anything about
it. Okay, ask the question, Marianne, because we're running out of time. Go ahead.
Okay. Is this going to affect the muscles and little tendons and things in my wrist? I mean, should I get this thing taken out? What would you suggest?
I tend to agree with that. I tend to agree with that in terms of if it is a true ganglion cyst, which are a common thing too, and it's not putting a pain in your wrist and not giving you a limitation of your activities. If you don't mind the way it looks, you can certainly watch it, and it really shouldn't affect you down the line. If it gets bigger or more painful, then there's things to talk about, you know, getting rid of them. But by and large, they're benign.
Okay.
Thank you very, very much. Okay. We are basically out of time. I am so sorry. A big sorry to Tom from Pittsfield. Also, I thank all, and from Marianne we just talked to. And thank you, Dr. Michael Mulligan, for joining us today. Thanks to our engineer, the superb Zach Malloy, Thanks to Joe Makowitz for answering the phones, our producers Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Now, thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at WAMC.org/VoxPop. Now, I want everybody to relax a little bit, listen to a little theme music, and then we'll play the news, and you'll know that Hillary is running for president.